You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
So then about this point, his expedition with stores to Jeddah for the first time, this sort of where Seven Pillars of Wisdom kicks in and the movie Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes,
it's sort of around this point where the story, the main story really starts. So in Seven Pillars of Wisdom, he spent the first bit of the book is setting up a lot of the things we've set up, just talking about the Ottoman Empire a bit and talking about the Arabs a bit.
Yeah.
One last thing I want to mention before we just go into the story is this relationship between Arabs, true Arabian Arabs, and the sort of wider Arab world, if you like. So there's sort of the true Arabian, sometimes Bedouin, not always Bedouin, but the true Arabian Arabs.
Sure.
And then there's like Arabic people of Mesopotamia and what became Transjordan and modern day Lebanon and Syria and stuff.
Yes.
So they see themselves sort of, it's a bit different. So the way you might say Scandinavian and Germanic and British people are all essentially the same ethnicity, let's say, and might share the same religion, but they're actually separate, they're actually fairly separate sort of identities, got different histories and all sorts of things going on. So there's that to mention, I think, is worth mentioning.
Yes. This is one of the things that Lawrence talks about, isn't it? That, you know, because if the end goal is an independent Arab people, well, because of the Ottoman Empire, such a thing as, like, you know, a group of independent Arabs has not existed for centuries. And so what is actually, what can be the foundational myth, you know, that they can all tie themselves around, that they can feel they've got some loyalty to one another? And Lawrence comes to the opinion, I think this is one of the things he talks about when he's in the Arab Bureau. He says, if it is to be successful and stable, then it's going to have to fundamentally be based on Sunni Islam, and it's going to have some sort of historical memory of the times before the Ottomans. There's going to have to be some renaissance of Arab history, Arab consciousness, you know, as a people, as a civilization of their own, you know, before the Turks, which is obviously an enormously ambitious thing to undertake.
One interesting line, very interesting line from Seven Pillars of Wisdom, which always strikes me whenever I've read it, is talks about how the Turks tried to, did their own version of colonialism, and that was extremely, extremely repressive and oppressive, extremely so. But the way sort of the osmosis, the reverse osmosis was the case though. So Turkish words, you're supposed to only speak Turkish if you were in a colonial government or at universities and things. Mm. Any official cable and things should always be in Turkish. For example, they tried to repress Arabic,
yeah,
the language.
And
not only didn't it work, but Turkish got laced with Arabic words.
Mm.
You know how in English there's a few French words we use, like rendezvous or something.
Right.
Like Turkish got flooded with Arabic words, apparently. I mean, I'm told.
Yeah, I'm told. I don't speak Turkish or Arabic, but it's true.
All right. Yeah. That's what it says in Seven Pillars of Wisdom.
Yes.
And where they try to just enforce Turkish customs and culture on the Arabs, like it so didn't work.
Mm. Yeah.
Because Arabic culture is older.
Mm.
And more ingrained. And well, anyway, I think that's an important, just a broad important point.
Yeah, definitely. Also, one thing to mention as regards to the just a brief history before Lawrence arrives is that in particular Prince Faisal, who's going to be a major character,
the main character,
going forward.
Lawrence himself,
good old Guinness. but he is still pretending to be loyal to the Turks. He's in Damascus with, I think it's Enver Pasha. Yeah. Who's...
So the Young Turk Revolution has happened.
Yes.
Already. So the Sultan, the old Sultan, has been deposed.
Yeah.
And the new government of the Ottoman Empire is this, the Young Turks.
Yes.
And it's basically a triumvirate of three Pashas, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jamal Pasha.
Yeah, Enver Pasha, and Talal.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. But so Faisal is having to, and he gets told that, well, Faisal says, I'll go down to Mecca and I'll inspect the troops ready for that march on Suez that we've promised you. And
so all this is shortly before Lawrence,
arrives. Right. And Enver says, oh, well, there's no worry because Jamal's coming down from Constantinople to inspect them too. And so Faisal is in, at Mecca with doing troop maneuvers with two of the three main Young Turks having to pretend to be on their side. And I think it's Sheriff Ali of the Harith, who's obviously in the film, there is a Sheriff Ali played by Omar Sharif, but he's in the film, he's more of an amalgamation of several characters, but there was a historical Sheriff Ali of the Harith, and he's there and he says, why aren't we just killing them? You know, why aren't we just killing them now? But Faisal's very honourable. He's like, no, the guests, we can't do that. It's not who we are. But yeah, even there. But then they get really suspicious, obviously.
The
Young Turks get really suspicious that something's amiss. But fortunately, Faisal's able to get away. He's not held prisoner. And yeah, so there's this whole subterfuge before Lawrence comes along and the Turks aren't quite aware just that.
So the Arab revolt, by the time Lawrence goes to Arabia, the revolt has already started.
Yes.
Okay. So just to make this crystal clear for everyone, the Arabs are supposed to be, or are, on the side of the Ottomans.
Mm.
The Arabs are just part of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
So they're all on the same side, even though they hate each other.
Mm.
They're all on the same side until the Arabs do finally start their own revolt.
Mm.
And that is just, as we say, just before Lawrence gets involved in the story. So Mecca and Medina are quite close to each other, relatively close to each other, aren't they, on the map? What is it, 100 miles less? I can't remember. Should just know that.
A bike ride for Lawrence.
It's not that far, right?
Mm.
And so Mecca and Medina, as far as the Turks are concerned, are important cities in their empire.
Yes.
That's how they look at it. You know, more than important, they're holy cities.
The two most important cities in Islam.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the most important cities in Islam are Mecca, Medina, Jerusalem, in that order.
Yeah.
So, yeah, holy cities, yeah. And to this day, I don't think you're allowed in Mecca unless you're a Muslim. Is that right? Can that be right?
Yeah, I've heard this. I think apparently you are allowed in outer Medina these days,
right,
but you're obviously not allowed in the innermost part where Muhammad's tomb is and everything. Yeah. So
the Grand Mosque.
Yes.
stuff. So the Sharif of Mecca, they've pushed the Turks out of Mecca.
Yes.
And they're trying to retake Medina.
Mm.
So there's a big Turkish garrison in Medina. I say big, it's thousands.
Yeah.
And they've got artillery, machine guns, they've got everything. It's a big, medium-sized Turkish army in Medina.
Under a Fakhri Pasha.
Yeah.
Who I think even the Allies described him as like the Lion of Medina or something. They had just a genuine respect for his resilience against, you know, respecting the enemy.
So the Turkish army, the Ottoman army, we must say, not only is actually quite competent, almost as competent, not quite, but almost as competent and professional as like the German army or the British army, nearly.
Yes.
Very nearly. So not to be sniffed at in any way, shape or form. On top of that, though, they are extremely brutal. They do massacres and genocides and shit.
Yeah. Famously.
They're terrifying.
Infamously, the Armenian... Right. You know, genocide, which is a...
Which just happened.
Yeah,
happened the year before this.
Yes, right? But also, you know, less talked about is the massacre of hundreds of thousands of Assyrian Christians, other people, ethnic groups within their empire, because the Young Turks, in their efforts to maintain the Ottoman Empire, there's this Turkification going on where, you know, the emphasis is on more sort of a nationalism. Yeah. Of Turkish identity.
Arch-Turkish nationalism, yeah. Yeni Turan, Turkey for the Turks.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, all these, the minorities in the empire, so many of them, you know, all of a sudden are, you know, in a much more precarious, dangerous place than they have even historically been within the empire. It's probably the worst time to be a minority the Ottoman Empire.
So another quick words on that then. So like the Balkans and things have been breaking away from the Ottomans for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, all throughout the 19th century, really. The Young Turks were trying to just put a stop to losing things.
Mm.
They're just trying to put a stop to it. It's like the Armenians are subversive and a pain. We're going to kill every single one of them then.
Mm.
We're going to round them all up, hundreds of thousands, millions of them. Take them out to the desert and
death marches.
Do death marches out in the desert until they're all gone. And so they'd done that to the Armenians in 1915, so just before this. And after the Arab revolt breaks out, you can only imagine that the Turks, the Young Turks, were thinking if they could, they'd do something similar to the Arabs, the Bedouin anyway, at least if they could. But it's all up for grabs because there's this. So the Sharif of Mecca's armies under his sons are trying to take Medina, which isn't a million miles from Mecca.
Yes.
And they've tried and they failed. So that's a big problem.
Just couldn't face up to the artillery.
The Turkish army's too good.
Yeah.
It's too professional and too good. And the Turks have got a modern train track all the way from Constantinople, all the way down through the Holy Land, all the way down through what becomes Jordan, all the way down to Medina.
Yeah.
There's a train track so they can resupply them endlessly if they need to. So the fact that they failed to retake Medina could very easily just mean that this Arab revolt gets squished out by the Turks real quick, and then the Turks do some sort of Armenian-style repercussions. This Arab revolt looks really shaky. It's newly born and it might die straight away. And this is the point where T.E. Lawrence and Ronald Storrs turn up at Jeddah, which is again just on the coast, Red Sea coast, quite very close really to Mecca and Medina.
Mm.
And King Hussein himself isn't prepared to leave Mecca, but he sends, it's Ali, isn't it? Abdullah
is the first one Lawrence meets.
So, let's talk about that. This is where the story and the movie sort of really kick in, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose the first thing to talk about with Lawrence's interaction with the sons of Hussein is that Lawrence he's looking for a leader.
Yes.
Right, he's looking for which one of these men can be a figure with the vision, the purpose, the who can command the respect, you know, to unite this revolt around. And so, he visits Abdullah and Faisal and Zayed. And although he likes Abdullah, Abdullah is, you know, he fundamentally just doesn't think he's quite serious enough.
Yeah.
So he's too jovial, he's too humorous, he's too, you know, everything's just too casual about him. You know.
So it's interesting that, so what Lawrence and Storrs and just the British, the first thing they're looking for to try and help to bolster this Arab revolt before we start giving them naval artillery support and loads of money and on and on and on.
Yes.
Is need a decent leader.
Mm.
Not just a decent leader, a charismatic leader. The old King Hussein in Mecca is not up to it. He's an old man and he's stubborn and he's not really a leader of men.
No.
What particularly Lawrence is looking for is, and the bar is set really high. He wants someone that's almost like a mythical, something from the past.
Right.
He's looking for charisma dialed up. He's looking like a religious leader, someone that can lead a jihad through sort of force of personality. So he meets Abdullah, who, as far as the Arabs are concerned, is sort of probably the senior brother.
Right.
The most important brother. He's sort of the most polished, the most educated, probably tactically, strategically, probably you would have thought the best.
Mm.
He's sort of the obvious choice. He can hobnob with British diplomats.
Mm.
He's sort of got it all. But when Storrs and Lawrence meet him, Lawrence and Storrs' opinion is that he's, something like too languid, too sort of relaxed and casual and off the cuff. He's not like this badass war master.
No.
He's not that.
No.
And that's kind of what Lawrence and the British want or need.
Yes.
We need to beat the Turks in the field.
Mm.
We don't need this languid diplomat type dude. Mm. I mean, Abdullah does go on to be king of Jordan, Transjordan.
Right, he does, yes. Right? Yes.
So he
quite
is
effectively
a king.
As well.
He actually gets assassinated in the 1950s, doesn't he?
Mm.
By a Palestinian.
Yeah.
Anyway. So he is a king, but he's not quite right.
Yeah.
He's not what Lawrence wants.
No.
Not what the British need. Not what the Arabs need.
Mm.
So, okay, there's a few more sons to...
Yeah. So... But I think Faisal's the next one that he goes to visit. He rides out to Faisal's camp further inland. So that's the other thing as well. Because... the British are trying to help you and are allies to a degree, but Lawrence actually has to get permission to be allowed to go further inland to go see Faisal. And he gets the permission, of course, and this is where he meets Prince Faisal. I don't know what your opinion is, but and I'm sure a lot of it is just due to the fact that basically every time Lawrence writes about Faisal and the Seven Pillars, he's absolutely fawning over him. You know, like it's clear that Lawrence had the highest opinion of Faisal. And I suppose through the sheer force of his writing and the way that Lawrence tells it, you can't help but feel that way either.
Mm.
Like Faisal is clearly a great man, you know, a great leader of men. You know, he's philosophical, he's sophisticated, he's pious, but pragmatically pious.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he has the seriousness that Abdullah perhaps was lacking, you know, and I think Lawrence and also his face. One of the things about his face that's remarkable as well is that actually he does look a considerable amount like Alec Guinness. You know, it's quite remarkable. Lawrence even says that in it. He says he looked quite European in his complexion. You know, I mean, obviously Guinness is a bit more obvious, but, you know, it's still, it's interesting that Lawrence basically almost knows the moment that he sees him, that this is a man that he's looking for.
Yeah. This is the king you are looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the film, Lawrence of Arabia, David Lean's 1962 film.
Yeah.
He's played by Sir Alec Guinness.
My favourite actor.
Alec Guinness sort of browned up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get it these days.
No. His accent. He took lessons from Omar Sharif as well for his accent a little bit. So,
So the figure of Faisal Hussein.
Mm.
Later becomes a king as well.
Mm.
He is the sort of the pivotal character, other than Lawrence, in this story. He's the absolutely pivotal person, Faisal. I think he's the second son. He's not the eldest son of the
third.
King. He's the third. Mm. Okay. But he's got it. Whatever it is, whatever Lawrence was looking for, this sort of effortlessly, an effortless authority, where at a glance, he is the leader type person. It's difficult to explain what that je ne sais quoi is, right? But Lawrence and everyone seems to be convinced that Faisal has it. Also, like all his other brothers, very sort of polished and a great diplomat and a great politician, all that sort of thing. But also a war leader. Also, he could lead a camel charge against Turkish guns. Right? So that's much rarer. Or he'll order other men to do so and they will obey without question. More importantly, perhaps.
One of the actually interesting things about Faisal as well is that actually, because of the disastrous siege at Medina that Faisal did participate in, and those the artillery, that really spooked him, actually. He didn't, after that, he didn't want to get involved in conflict. Like, any personal courage that he actually had, it was, unlike Lawrence, who was fearless, Faisal privately actually had a lot of fear, but nonetheless he overcame it to do what needed to be done and to do what, which I think is even more than Lawrence, I think is even more exceptional, to have that fear and master it for the higher cause.
Yeah, no, good point. Yeah, that is more remarkable. It is more of an achievement. If you're sort of somehow incapable of feeling fear, and then you went ahead and act fearlessly, like, yeah, that's who you are.
Yeah.
That was that's second nature to you. Yeah, but to be terrified and overcome it, right? So, yes, that attack, that original attack on, or more than one, original attempt on Medina by him and his brother, Zaid as well, I think, where they failed, it sort of knocked their confidence.
Yeah.
Because as I've kept saying, the Turkish army is professional. The Arab army is not. To call them irregulars is being kind. They're mainly sort of Bedouin tribesmen.
Camels and swords.
Camels and swords. And flintlock rifles and stuff. Ancient, crappy rifles that no one really knows how to maintain or aim properly. All that sort of stuff, right? So, so the Turks whoop them outside Medina easily, sort of thing. So, yeah, and it sort of knocks their confidence. And anyway, I mean, Faisal's job is much more... I talked about leading camel charges and all that sort of thing, but his job really is to, as a coalition builder, as being a figurehead. The job of being a figurehead.
Yes.
And that's what Lawrence is looking for. That's what's needed at this stage. And he sees, apparently he says, and you described him as, whenever he talks about Faisal in Seven Pillars of Wisdom, it's always fawning. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the biographies I read talks a little bit about hero worship, because Lawrence of Arabia himself becomes the object of some sort of hero worship.
Sure.
But he himself, the real T.E. Lawrence, was a sucker for hero worship. He recognised it as sort of a folly, but was also absolutely guilty of it himself.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of people that he hero worshipped. There's Faisal. There's, who's the other main warlord? Abu Tai'i.
Yeah.
Allenby. Yeah. He even sort of...
To be fair,
even,
I think I hero worship Allenby.
Yeah, yeah. Hero worshipped Allenby. He hero worshipped Churchill to some degree. So he sort of falls in love in a completely non-sexual way. Falls in love with Faisal, right?
Yeah.
Sort of falls in love with him. He's like, he's the guy. He's the dude.
Yes.
Right? And we've got that. That's the first keystone in this thing. It's him. It goes on from there, right? What are the next... Well, one of the things I want to say, you said he got permission to go inland and meet Faisal, because he meets Faisal inland. He didn't really get permission. He just tells, or was it Clayton? Stores. He says, I'm going inland.
Right.
Now, usually, you would absolutely need the green light from your senior officers to do such a thing, to go and potentially commit suicide. That's almost a suicidal thing.
Bear in mind, the entire time Lawrence is out here, it's under the guise of, I'm just taking, some leave that I'm entitled to.
Yeah. Yes. And now I'm going to go into the middle of Arabia where no British staff officer has been, essentially on my own, Well, he's got like an Arab escort.
Yes.
But and I'm going to go wearing the Arab headdress and stuff.
Mm.
In fact, Faisal very quickly, almost, I'm not sure if it's their first meeting, but very, very quickly says, stop wearing like the khaki uniform of a British officer and wear these Arab robes. And he gives them those sort of famous, iconic white robes.
Right.
With the golden agal. And yeah, so the image of Lawrence of Arabia is born quite quickly there.
Yeah.
And Lawrence is happy to go along with it. Because apart from anything else, those robes and the headgear is just way, way, way better in the desert.
Yeah.
For a number of different reasons, for heat control and sand.
Yeah,
and
I have actually worn one time when I was in Egypt. And I it wasn't exactly as like Lawrence's, but yeah, it was actually really remarkable how it helps you control your body temperature out there.
Yeah, yeah. But these, the white robes and the golden agal is immediately says, you're not just an average Arab. It says you're someone important.
Mm.
In fact, specifically to do with Mecca and stuff. So, okay. So right away, he's risking his life, Lawrence. He's behind Turkish lines, essentially.
Is this where the Turks tried to counterattack to take Yendo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a bit of a back and forth, a little bit of a ding-dong back and forth, really, in the war in Arabia between the Turks and the Arabs.
Mm.
And the most important thing as far as Lawrence is concerned, or as far as the British are concerned, is the sort of the flow of flour, ammo, and gold to keep the Arab revolt going.
Right.
We're going to need to lots and lots of these things constantly turning up in the Hejaz.
Because of the Arabs aren't going to accept paper notes.
Right.
They want hard gold, you know. Yeah.
They absolutely don't trust paper money.
Yeah. No.
It's gold or nothing, almost, with one or two exceptions. But they need food, they need ammo, they need money, because a lot, even the Bedouin Arabs, they won't fight endlessly for the sake of it, for the sake of the House of Hussein.
Yes.
They're going to need money. And the Arab tribes people have sort of got kind of endless intertribal conflicts and vendettas and feuds.
Mm.
And to get them all to pull together as one, I mean, is really, really difficult. That's the that's what Faisal and Lawrence are a genius of, is getting that to happen.
Yes.
That's just a very, very difficult thing to do.
If you'd like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.